looking forward to a conversation here in this next segment ahead with Stephen Greenhut, who's joining us now. He is the editor of a book called Saving California. And if the title alone doesn't intrigue you, then you're just not paying attention. Stephen Greenhut, welcome to the show today. Do I have you there, Stephen? Are you with me?
Yes, can you hear me?
There we go. Now we got
Sorry about that.
No problem. Live radio, it is what it is. So let's talk about this. First of all, the book is from Pacific Research Institute. I always like to tell people a little bit about the background of things. So give us a quick note on PRI.
Yeah, PRI is a free market think tank, and they've been around for many decades and promote limited government and public policy solutions. So This book is focused on some solutions, things that we can adopt. It's a policy book. It's not a political book. It's timed, it comes out at the time where we're having a raucous recall election, but it's focused on ideas and a critique of California's public policy and some of the solutions that any candidates could and should embrace, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The issues that come up in any state, particularly though in California, where there's so many moving parts and so much going on and so much at stake all the time, it makes me wonder when we get into a recall, does it have much to do with the person who happens to be in the governor's office, or is it just this grinding group of issues that would cause trouble for anybody in governance? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's both, really. I mean, I know that's a kind of a cop out, but there's usually a person that is the magnet. I covered when I worked for the Orange County Register back during the Davis recall. I mean, I thought Gray Davis was a magnet for criticism, his kind of deer in the headlights handling of some of the problems that were going on at the time. And then there was, Arnold Schwarzenegger emerged as a compelling figure that was able to reach across party lines. And I just remember the electricity brownouts and the vehicle license fee going up. And there's just a kind of, people use the cliche, the perfect storm, but there was a number of issues that gelled at the time. And this one has been interesting to watch. I think a lot of it grew out of frustration of the COVID situation and Newsom, I don't believe has been as strong leader. I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago about saying how we all miss Jerry Brown sort of, and Brown never had a recall or any sort of serious recall. I mean, there are always people collecting signatures for that have no chance. But Brown was really in control. And even though I didn't always agree with him, he seemed to really have his act together. He knew what he was doing. And there's a little less of a focus maybe from Newsom, and a number of other things have popped up that have caused a lot of widespread frustration. But the point in the book, it's not about the recall, not about any particular election. There are quite a few issues that have come to the fore in California, and there seems to be a pretty strong lack of leadership in dealing with them. So, in the book, we look at the Joel Kotkin from Chapman University, a well-known writer. He talks about, the business climate and the kind of this overall situation. And Wendell Cox is a former LA planner and expert in housing and the housing crisis, the absurd prices driven by, there's just been a lack of adequate building. I mean, the Legislative Analyst Office says couple of years ago did a report of how we're underbuilding, the state's underbuilding more than 100,000 units a year. We need that many more just to keep pace with our slowing population. And then the homelessness crisis. Wayne Weingarten, who's academic with PRI, I mean, he looks at that crisis, and that has risen to the fore. I mean, we see it everywhere. And in fact, it was Jerry Brown himself who, in an interview not that long ago, pointed to the state's wrong-headed approach. It's not, as he pointed out, it's not a housing issue totally. I mean, it's partially a housing issue, but it's also a mental health issue and a substance abuse issue. And we have to do more than just build houses. And in the way the state, build houses, affordable housing or housing for the homeless, I mean, you need to do that. But, then L.A. was on one of their housing complexes for the homeless. It was built at more than $700,000 a unit. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that rate, we'll go bust before we house many homeless people. So Adrian Moore from Reason Foundation looks at the infrastructure issue, road construction, and part of the problem I've often argued is we have to want to build infrastructure, and there seems to be a focus on social engineering rather than transportation engineering. I'm thinking back to Gray Davis. I remember when he basically announced that the era of freeway building is over, and it was. The state largely stopped building freeways, and yet the population continued to grow, and go figure, congestion is worse. And I did a chapter, it was an excerpt from my recent book on called Winning the Water Wars, about the way the state has not dealt with its water issues. So we haven't built any real serious water infrastructure since the 1970s. I mean, I can think of one project, but beyond that, we haven't. So the state's population has nearly doubled and yet we haven't built the infrastructure to keep up with that growing population. Mm-hmm. Focus continues to be on conservation, which is a good idea. I'm all for conservation, but conservation and even rationing, when 50% of the state's water flows out to the Pacific for environmental uses. So you need water for environmental uses, but 40% is for ag, and only 10% is for urban uses. 5.7% is for residential uses. So if we ration based on that 5.7%, we're not gonna provide So I go into some of the things we can do. Lance Azumi looks at education and how we can help poor kids. And Pat Nolan, former assemblyman, goes into criminal justice reform. So we go a lot of things. Mm-hmm. The wildfire chapter, Dan Kolke has a fabulous chapter on what we can do about wildfires, but and Sally Pipes on our healthcare issues. But and the last one was Richard Mercereau. He was the former top assembly Republican, and he looks at some of the budgetary reforms. But the point is, a lot of these issues, you need leadership, and they take time to address. And the state seems to kind of bumble its way from one crisis to another. And the state's leaders seem focused on a broader progressive, social service agenda, without taking care of the fundamentals first.
Mm-hmm. We're talking here with Stephen Greenhut, and he's the editor of this new book called Saving California. And again, if you're just tuning in, this isn't a partisan position kind of book. This is looking at a variety of different issues from the perspective of folks who work with the PRI, which is the Pacific Research Institute. And the idea is not to just call each other names and argue partisan positions, but look at actual ideas to change some of these things. Depending on who you are, you may or may not agree with the solutions being offered. But the point is, these are proposals for ways to do things differently. Let me throw you this challenge, Stephen. A free market focus, philosophically, is all well and good, but isn't it true that a lot of California's problems are because we have a free market? And the one you point to most immediately is the cost of housing. You can say, well, we're building 200 new units to solve some of our housing shortage, but if they're market rate units, that doesn't do anything for the vast majority of people who can't afford them. And we continue to have this, the housing crisis goes on. 20 people living in one house and people commuting enormous distances. Is it possible that it's actually regulation that we need in some of these areas, not free market?
Well, our state has the most regulated housing market in the nation, and the problem is the regulations and the costs that we keep piling on are distorting the market, and we're reducing supply. And I do recommend that LAO report. I mean, and it's you know it's the legislative analyst's office. Mm-hmm. It points to all the many rules and regulations. Things like CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, all the myriad local planning regulations. We have no new solar mandates. And when I worked for the newspaper in San Diego, I remember looking at the cost of new housing, and 40% of it was attributed to the cost of regulations and fees. That's not the market. That's the government impeding the market. And then when the government builds houses on its own, it just costs a bloody fortune. As Brent referring to Brown again, he said we can't subsidize our way out of the housing crisis. So the market would work just fine. And I'm not calling for, when I talk about free markets, I'm not calling for no regulations, but we have excessive regulations and excessive fees. And it just drives up the price of housing. The other thing it does is it because of the costs involved, it pushes developers to build higher end housing. In a healthy market, there would be and developers and builders would be incentivized to build things up and down the housing ladder. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing is Howard Husak, formerly of Harvard, he talked about the housing ladder People who have lower incomes don't generally buy brand new houses, right? So it's the housing ladder. Mm-hmm. My first house was an old house, and in fact, I've never owned a new house. And you buy an old house, and then you move up, and then that frees it up for somebody else. And then different housing products at different stages in your life. But our state, with its focus on climate change, has embraced a set of dubious policies, urban growth boundaries that make it extremely costly and difficult to build houses outside of these urban growth boundaries. And that just drives, it just limits supply and drives up the cost up and down the ladder. And then the state comes along and then they're going to build affordable housing units. And most people I know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with, condos and things, and I'm personally in favor of the legislation that would allow more than just single family dwellings in neighborhoods. I'm all for more market based solutions, and that's coming from a number of Democrats. They're just constricting. Most people don't want to live like that. Most people want a single family home at some point, and we're making it costly and difficult to do that. So it's not a market problem. It's a government problem, and that's what we see in everything. Our road, it costs us several times more than other states per road mile to build build freeways, and that's a government problem. It's a union problem. So I think we have plenty of government in California, and we just keep ladling more government on. And I'm arguing, and the writers argue for less government. Mm-hmm. And more market solutions. Markets do a better job than government. Governments do it. I've covered government and watched how it does things. And it makes a mess of everything. So education's another example.
Right? That's a pretty sweeping statement. Makes a mess of everything.
Well, it's sweeping, but it's true. I mean, there are certain things government should do, certain things. But most of what government does, it does in a bureaucratic way. Its objectives are determined by politics. Not by market. So, look at things like our high-speed rail project, which is driven by the government. So not that many people I know want to go, lovely cities that they are, from Merced to Bakersfield. And yet the private line that'll go from L.A. to Vegas, which people might actually want to take, that's going to be finished without much taxpayer. So the markets respond to demand, and government responds to politics. Yeah.
Let me, have you really given the Merced to Bakersfield vacation experience a chance, though? I mean, come on.
I like both of those cities, by the way. It's just that it's not, their people aren't clamoring to take that route.
Let me jump back to water. You wrote about water in your chapter of this book that we're talking about called Saving California. There's an old saying from way back when that a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged. I'm sure you've heard that expression before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
In terms of water policy, as you mentioned, there is a lot of fresh water from California that runs out to the sea, and that is for good reasons based on environmental needs and preserving of species and so on and so forth. And I think in a bigger picture, the cycle of water, how much do we want to mess with it, I guess. And yet, the staunchest environmentalist is going to think twice about, you know, tiny little fish somewhere when they turn on the shower and there's no water. And we're, you know, just looking at, you know, God forbid, one or two more really dry years. And here in Northern California, we're screwed. So it feels like there's a shift of mentality around this. Do you see where I'm going? And do you think that's true? Do you think there's actually potential for new projects, impounding more surface water and so on?
Well, I'm hoping. I mean, 50%, like we've mentioned, you know, 50% of the water runs out to the sea, and we need some of it for conservation, of course, but we don't need all of it. And the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, they have the big gulp, little sip. When you have big rainy years, you capture a little more of that water and you store it. And, you know, decades ago, we've turned California's river system into a giant plumbing system. So that's reality. It's given us water and enabled the state to grow to 40 million people and stop the tragic flood events that used to just turn huge portions of our state into giant lakes. Governor Stanford had to take a canoe to the Capitol for his inauguration. But I do believe that, you know, people, if the taps run dry, people are going to be more interested in water supply. For instance, Santa Barbara, which was that always, you know, wealthy, growth controlled, a community, refused to tap into the state water project for a long time. And then in the 90s, there was a severe drought, and guess what? They tapped into the state water project. They were concerned that water is growth inducing. Well, yeah, I guess it is in a way, but when they lost water, they tapped into the state water project. I think we're going to see some things that people will change their mind on that. Now, there are some things we can do that are not particularly objectionable that pretty much everyone agrees on. Like Orange County has a fabulous water recycling program. And the environmentalists like that, conservatives like that, and it's less costly than imported water. Desalination is something that's more controversial, but it's a good idea. We need consistency. It's a more expensive form of water. But when the taps are dry, I think I'd rather pay a little more for water and have water than pay less and not have water. But the bottom line on my argument is we need a policy of abundance. If you have more water in the system, that helps everyone. It helps the fish. It helps farms. It helps people. So we've got to save more water. And that includes infrastructure building, desalination, water recycling, tapping private water projects. There's the Cadiz project in the Mojave, an aquifer the size of Rhode Island, and yet state lawmakers have put all sorts of hurdles in front of that company from tapping the water supply. So we need better water pricing. Buying and selling water is a good way to get water to its highest and best use. The state has this incredible process for buying and selling water that makes it basically impossible to do. So there are a variety of things, but the desire needs to be abundance, feeding more water into the system, and that will help the environment. The desal plant proposed in Marina near Monterey, I mean, that could save the Carmel River, with the rivers being over tapped. So we need water for people, farms, and we need it for fish too. And all these, in the midst of the last drought, I had went out to the a water district out near Copperopolis, and the state and feds were emptying a reservoir to save a dozen hatchery-raised fish, which is absurd. And then the fish populations are declining. They had been declining even before this latest drought, because just pulse flows of water aren't saving fish. We need to restore habitats and fix the water conveyance system, like through the Delta in particular.
If I can steal a couple extra minutes from you, the subject of desalination comes up a lot more when we get into these drought periods. Explain for me, in sincerity, I don't know the answer to these questions. Some people point up the problem with the waste product that comes from desalination plants being a sort of a saline sludge that you don't want on the land or back into the ocean. So that's concern number one. And then the second concern I hear is that desalination is a very high energy use solution. And of course, we have trouble maintaining our electric grid as it is. What do you know about those two questions?
Yeah, I mean, like any waste product, I mean, we have a pretty sophisticated way of dealing with waste. I can't speak to the specifics of how, you know, the solution is dealt with. But you know, California has quite a few environmental rules, and that's not, you know, something that concerns me. The energy, I mean, we that's on the electrical grid, we need to provide enough, you know, we need to be building our energy system, as we have not been, you know, keeping up with that either. But that's not the big issue in the plant. There's a plant in Carlsbad that can supply 10% of San Diego County's water, and that's online. That's a big chunk of water in a county with more than 3 million people. Mm-hmm. An almost identical plant been stalled by the California Coastal Commission up in Huntington Beach. And those haven't been the issues at all. The issue has been concern about the intakes and concern about a plankton, you know, the floating mm-hmm. whale food. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me that environmentalists are looking for any sort of excuse to stop these projects, and that just seems asinine when you consider the amount of water that could be generated and that the percentage of our water needs that can be met through that. Now, the price right now is higher for desal than it is for imported water. However, a lot of the costs of imported water are hidden. So the price of the desal is what it costs to provide the water. We have all sorts of different bonds, revenue bonds and general obligation bonds and taxpayer expenditures that have gone into the water conveyance system that isn't reflected in the cost of water. Also, the cost of desal is going down and the cost of imported water is going up. Now, on the electricity grid, the generators have different types of electricity. So solar may be inexpensive at certain times, like during the day when the sun's out, but they need other costlier forms of electricity for times when the electricity isn't as plentiful. Same thing with desal. We're not talking about meeting all of the state's needs with desal, but some of its needs, you have that consistency in water supply. Even if it costs a little more, you know, the Pacific isn't going anywhere. And I have a chapter in my Winning the Water Wars book about Israel, which, you know, the Six-Day War was fought largely over diversions from the Jordan River. And now Israel has so much water, they're sending it to their neighbors and they're filling up reservoirs and it's incredible. And, you know, they had an existential threat with water, and we don't have a climate that severe in California, part of the state, but not most of it. So they were able to entirely solve their water problems through desalination. Hmm. And again, I'm not promoting desal as the only solution, mm-hmm. but it's one of the solutions. And I think there what I see, a lot of the environmental groups just seem to be geared up to say no to everything and to fight everything. And that's how they're geared. And it's in this process that we have, somebody needs to break that bottleneck. And I mean, even Governor Newsom supports the desal plant in mm-hmm. Huntington Beach. It shouldn't be. Governor Brown supported DeSalle. Pat Brown, you know, the Jerry's father, or Democrat, liberal Democrat. He was the driving force behind the state water project. So this idea, these aren't really partisan ideas. It's just we've had a shift in thinking. If we want to solve the water problem, you need to want to solve the water problem, not use it as an excuse simply to punish people for using water. Mm-hmm. And people, by the way, Californians and people throughout the West have been meeting all the conservation standards that the state has applied. I just did a TV show in Arizona, and in Arizona, Arizonans use less water than they did in the 1950s, mm-hmm. back when the population was 1/7 of its size. Mm-hmm. So it's not a conservation issue. People are conserving. It's a planning ahead issue. And our state in particular is not very good at planning ahead.
Very interesting conversation here with Stephen Greenhut, who is the editor of a new book called Saving California, which is published by the Pacific Research Institute. And we always encourage you to support local bookstores, but I'm sure you can find it in all the places where books are sold. Stephen, thanks for your time today. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. Take care. All right. Ran a little long there, but that's okay because I'm in charge and I can do that. We'll take a break, and there's more to come here on Wine Country Live in a moment.
Hey, Gary, how are things?
Things are great, but I crushed my mortgage payment with owning